Welcome back to Troubled, a podcast by survivors of institutional abuse for survivors in the general public. Often we talk about the roots of residential youth abuse in the United States and in Canada, all over the world, but specifically here in Turtle Island, where we are, being with the Indigenous. And that's one of those things that, because they've been so often exploited, you know, residential school survivors, we haven't had the opportunity to have anyone on the podcast. But we do have some friends in communities, and one of our friends who is Mi'kmaq in Nova Scotia in Canada. Hopefully all eyes are on them, as this is the All Eyes on Mi'kma'ki National Week of Action. If you are not aware, there have been overt acts of domestic terrorism against the Mi'kmaq fishermen, who are mainly lobster fishermen in Nova Scotia. We're talking full-on brutal attacks, arson, burning down vans, buildings, even their lobstery, their fishery, or whatever you call it. You know, I don't know what those things are about, but so a friend of ours, Ginger Knockwood, who is in Nova Scotia, her mother is a residential school survivor, and she has recorded a thesis about her mother, sung a song for us that her mother wrote, and included some clips of her mother. Recently, they have been dealing with attempting to raise awareness of removing the statue of John A. MacDonald, the creator of residential schools in Canada. He has a major prominent statue on Prince Edward Island in Nova Scotia. A lot of my Irish friends feel this way in England about, you know, the Cromwells and all of these things. And I'm not sure people understand, unless they're from a traumatized population, what it's like to literally have to coexist with statue, like giant statues of your abuser. This is your personal predator. And to have to just go about your day. And it's just this cute statue that birds and people pose with. That's just fucking not okay. And I think that that's something that's so hard for people like in my family to understand about these Columbus statues or, you know, Civil War statues here. They just don't get it. You know, it's not personal for them and they can't put themselves in other people's positions. But, you know, there is some recent coverage of Marie Knockwood, Ginger's mom, a Thunder Child, as she should be known and as she is, you know, staging these kinds of stuff in Nova Scotia and working with survivors to try to raise awareness about this. So check out all that news. But I just want to completely defer. So I'm going to cut out. And the rest of this program will be from the Knockwoods presenting this to you. And, you know, if it's hard for you guys to look at colonization as it happens, then that's more of a reason for you to really delve in and look at it. This is paramount to us moving forward. Wherever you may be, we still have to dismantle these systems, which are continuing to systemically dismantle our families and the Indigenous communities. And so there is no moving forward until we decolonize, and the institutional abuse of youth will continue. We will continue to have to assimilate peoples until we end the hostile occupation of Turtle Island. So with that, please look into and support the treaty rights of 1752 in Nova Scotia for the Mi'kmaq Nation. Remember, they are a sovereign nation. So these acts of violence are literally war crimes. But thankfully, the Indigenous are bigger and better people than most of us. So let's pass the mic. Thank you.
I was sexually abused. I tried to take it out of my mind, but I end up having nightmares. I don't hate non-Native, but I hate the leadership that did that to us. And still is going on today because they don't want to put this man out of this place. It's their history. What about my history? It was this man's doings. may have been in the 1800s, but the Indian agents and the governments kept it up. There is so much I could tell you that went on in my lifetime, in my children's lifetime, in my grandchildren's lifetime, and is still going on today.
Where is that?
Trying to destroy the native people is not going to work. Because we know the Creator.
Yeah.
And the Creator will protect us no matter what.
Damn right. Damn right.
This is all too personal. A residential school survivor from the Abigwid First Nation, on Sunday afternoon, Marie was part of a group that gathered around the John A. statue in Charlottetown for stories, drumming, and dancing. Marie shared some of her own story with Nicola McLeod and her thoughts on Canada's first Prime Minister.
We were there to educate, not to destroy the statue or anything like that or cause any problems. John A. Macdonald has been a thorn in the side of our people for many, many years. And things that he did, we didn't even fully understand or know because they weren't teaching that in the schools. But when this residential school thing happened with me, I started to try to understand where this all came from. And I started to dig more into the government and trying to figure out just what is going on. And then we find this in the 1800s, this John A. Macdonald was indeed the founder of a lot of the problems that our people, the native people, had. The smallpox, residential schools, abducting the children actually right from their parents. No matter the, you know, how good the parent is, it didn't matter. He was determined to take the children away from the savages, he said. And it's a statement he made. And put them in a institution where they could be taught.
And so as a residential school survivor, what does it mean to you when you're walking in Charlottetown or you're near the statue and you see what a prominent place it has in the city?
It just means to me that we're getting the still to this day, to this very day, the government is kind of like making fun of us. Not really. Every time I see that statue, like I've been traveling across Canada and I see that statue, not the same one, but other statues of him, and it fills me full of anger and bitterness. I get so angry because I know all the problems that he caused my people and me. I was raped at the residential school. I was beaten every day that I was there. I try to protect others from getting abused, and I've seen a lot of abuse happen. And I witnessed a lot of horrible, terrible things. No one believed me. No one believed us. There was a lot of us that were talking about it.
You know, with this event that took place on the weekend and hoping to bring education and awareness to the people of Charlottetown, what was it like sharing your story in that environment?
Well, I felt good. I felt like I was doing something about it. I wasn't being silenced. And the people there, I got comments back from a lot of the people that they were happy we were doing that. Well, there was some, very few, that gave us a dirty look, didn't make no comments, but gave us a dirty look, and we understand those looks. And they, those looks don't hurt. But they just, I just feel like, hey, you just don't know the whole gist of things. I wake up in nightmares. And it'll take a while, and I'm able to push that in the back again. And, but every time I talk about it, I think it doesn't bother me. It's when I sleep, or when I'm half asleep, these memories haunt me. They bring me back there.
And as a residential school survivor, what would you like to see happen with the John A. McDonald statue in Charlottetown?
I would like to see things like that. Not displayed like that. It haunts me. I don't know why. I don't know why they have to have that there. They have a nice story of Anne of Green Gables, and the story is there, that they have this statue sitting there. You know, it don't make no sense. I would like to have that statue removed from there. And whoever it is that wants that statue there, I like to talk with them. I don't think they know how horrible this man was. If they just did a little bit more research on that man, I don't think they'd be very proud to display him like that, where people could see him like that.
Maria, I really appreciate you sharing your thoughts and your story with me today.
Thank you.
Maria Knockwood lives in the Abigwood First Nation, speaking with Nicola McLeod.
A story about Gokdagwasis, Thunder Child, also known as Maria Knockwood, my mother. In May 1947, there was a huge thunderstorm, the worst in years. There was a major downpour and lightning, and it thundered all night long. At about 3 o'clock in the morning, it was over. All the time, it was thundering. A Mi'kmaq woman was in labor. When the storm subsided, she gave birth to her daughter, Gokdagwasis, Thunder Child, Maria Knockwood. This took place in Shubenacadie, Nova Scotia, in a house on a reservation that used to be known as Mi'kmaq Reserve, but is today called Beaverbrook Reserve. Marie's father had gone to get the doctor, and while he was gone, the bridge that was between the reserve and the doctor's place has washed out. This left her father and the doctor trapped on the opposite side of the bridge. While her mother was in labor, she heard about the bridge being washed out, so an old lady came to help with the delivery. The old lady was known for making beautiful wooden flowers. She lived to be 109 years old. This woman who delivered Maria Knockwood, Marie's aunt, Matilda Lewis, her father's sister, was also there. Aunt Matilda was the one who went to get the old lady. Marie was born on a type of cardboard-like tar paper, which was used to build shacks and such. They didn't have any clean sheets or anything else to have her on. Her mother was in great pain, and as soon as the old lady arrived, she started to push. So the old lady immediately washed her hands, and then she had to warm them by the fire because they were very cold. As soon as she walked in the room, she saw that the baby was already starting to come out. As soon as the baby emerged, her mother started asking what was wrong because the baby wasn't crying. The old lady then told her something very important. The baby was not crying because it was still in the sack, as the water had not broken. She took it out and placed the entire sack on the floor. She then told Marie's mother that when the baby comes into the world in this way, it is a gift from the spirit world. The baby is not allowed to be excited, scared, or frightened in any way. So the old lady told everybody not to get excited or cry or scream, but only to hum as nicely as they could. They did not want to scare this gift that they had been given. So they all put on their happy, gentle faces so as not to scare the baby with any cross looks. The old lady then gently took out her jackknife and opened the sack, talking meanwhile to the baby, letting her know everything she was doing. She told the baby that she was a gift sent from the spirit world and that she was very special. She welcomed her into the world as the water gushed out of the sack. She then gently scooped up the phlegm and mucus out of her mouth and sucked out what was left. All the while she was telling the baby exactly what she was doing. She then used warm water and a cloth to wash her face. Then the baby was oiled as she was being constantly spoken to. The others in the room weren't sure what was wrong with the old lady. The baby was then wrapped in a cheesecloth and given to her mother to be fed. The old lady then took the sack to be treated and dried. She scraped and cleaned it and wrapped it in newspaper and gave it to the elder, Aunt Matilda. She told her to look after it because it was Marie's power. She was to keep it until Marie got older. And then if she was good, she was to give her the power. But if she was bad, she was to burn it. Marie's Aunt Matilda didn't believe the old lady, so she burned it anyways. But when Marie grew up, the spirits allowed her to have her power anyhow. When Marie was 6 months old, shortly after World War II, her family moved from Shubenacadie to Lennox Island, Prince Edward Island. This is because the RCMP were going around destroying all the Native people's documents, especially the 1752 treaty, which was signed by the chiefs and the queen. Anything representing their culture, such as talking sticks, sage, or eagle feathers, would have been taken and destroyed because the RCMP believed these to be symbols for worshiping the devil. They wanted to convert everybody to Christianity. So Marie's family left Shubenacadie to escape all of this. They found Prince Edward Island to be a safe haven where they could hide and get away from the federal government and the RCMP. Growing up on Lennox Island, Marie had a very abusive childhood. Her people never really understood the reasons why she was brought into the world in the way she was. Therefore, they were afraid of her and her power. She was a child from the spirit world, and so people feared her since she was different from them. On a small scale, this is a parallel to how the white people abused the native people as a whole because they feared them since they were different. Growing up, she wasn't sure why they all feared her so much, although she was aware of their fears. Because she was never excluded from any conversations or discussions. Her people knew that as a child, she was a living history book. She would remember things that were said long after the elders were gone. So her people realized the importance of having their children listen to all their conversations. So this is the way that Marie came to learn that many of her people feared her. Throughout her childhood, she sat on council meetings and often had wise people ask for her advice. This really scared many of her people. They had developed a fear of the spirit world. Since they were entering a stage of losing their old faith and developing great fears of many things, this was the result of the RCMP instilling in them that they were pagans, worshiping the devil, and that they should fear God. The Native people were in an extreme state of confusion about their spiritual beliefs and therefore feared Marie, since she was from the spirit world that they no longer felt comfortable with. In her life, Marie Knockwood has seen her people torn apart. She knows of one man who was capable of supporting and looking after his family, became completely mentally and spiritually crippled, and have every dignity stripped of him. She has seen perfectly innocent people be degraded and treated as criminals. Although they have done nothing wrong, their only crime was being Native. How were white people able to do these things to Native people? When Marie was a child, an elder gave her the answer to this question. She was told that she had to sleep because she was human, and she had to rest because she was human. White people, on the other hand, never slept or rested because they were not human. So in the time when the Native people were sleeping, the white people would cause all the trouble and devastation that they did. As a child, Marie found this explanation easy to believe. Today, Marie knows there has to be a real reason for all the horrible things that has happened to her people. She feels that life is still bad for them because it seems like nothing has changed, even though people are being educated more and more about the tremendous discrimination and injustice against Native people. Native people have been treated in a way that seems to go against human life and therefore against white people themselves. That is if they think of themselves as being human, which Marie once believed that perhaps they didn't. Marie tells her children that if you can go back and trace your ancestry to this land, then this is where you are from. If you trace your roots to Europe or somewhere else, then that is where you are from. You may be born here, but you are not from here. She has often used the media to convey this message because she knows that the media is a very powerful tool, which she always learned to use to her advantage. However, anything Marie ever said in the media against white people was always thrown back in her face. Yet she always seemed to find a way to rebuttal, even though there was always somebody there to study everything she said and think of the counterattack many white people have told Marie, that they are 100% Canadian and refuse to trace their roots any further back than what's in Canada. She finds this sad. It is their loss not to know where their ancestors came from. Marie's grandfather, Joe Martin, came from Ireland, married a Native woman, spoke Mi'kmaq, and hung on to the Native traditions because he knew how important that would be. Her mother's father was a Murphy, Scottish, who married a Native. Therefore, Marie herself is of mixed blood. However, she finds it very difficult to respect her non-Native heritage. Yet, her mother used to sing Irish songs to her to try to encourage a pride in her in that part of her history also. But she was unsuccessful. Marie studied Ireland and saw the fighting that was going on between the Catholics and the Protestants, and all the senseless deaths. Someone once told Marie that there always has to be war to sustain a kind of balance, because without it, the world would be overpopulated. However, Marie feels that life in Canada seems to be balanced quite well without war, and nobody sees Native people overpopulated. Marie is a very strong Catholic, traditionalist, spiritualist, and a strong believer in everything she feels is right. That is what makes up her religion and her faith. She says that if you believe you are right, then you must defend that to the hilt. If you're not destroying, prosecuting, killing, or murdering people, and your ideas are good, then you should let your ideas be known. When she sees her own people hiding things, it is sad. Many Native people have the image instilled in them that white people are perfect, clean, and godlike. Therefore, if a white person was to come to their house, they would be scrambling around trying to make everything look perfect. Otherwise, they would suffer great embarrassment. Marie's mother once had made some very tasty Native bread when some Lebanese people came to visit. She immediately began to hide everything Native, including the bread. But Marie told the guests that her mother had hidden the bread, which she made them want to taste it. They absolutely loved it, and her mother couldn't believe it and was absolutely furious with Marie. Marie told her mother that the other people may drive fancy cars, live in fancy houses, and wear fancy clothes, but that doesn't mean that Native people are any less important than them. Everyone is human, and we all make mistakes and do things wrong, but we try and struggle, all of us equally. Some of us struggle all day and all night and get farther than others, but that's life. Marie's mother had a hard time accepting this talk of equality ever since her children were taken from her and sent to the residential schools. She felt extremely inferior to white people. She was told that her people were filthy and dirty and that it was a disgrace for her children to be brought up in such a slum. However, nobody ever bothered to look at how white people raise their children. Today, Marie is still fighting in the courts about having been sent to the residential school. She feels, however, that she is fighting a losing battle because she is Native and would be lucky to merely receive an apology. Native people fight for everything they have and yet have nothing. Many white people laugh and say that Native people are spoiled with free housing, free medical, free education. So what else do they want from society? How about a chance to live in equality? This means a chance for people to get the same jobs with the same pay as white people, becoming doctors, lawyers, teachers, astronauts, or anything they want to be. Equality also means a chance for Native children to attend public schools without being harassed and discriminated against by both students and teachers. These are only some of the ways in which Native people are still being treated as lower forms of human beings. This has been going on for too long, and it is time for every person to realize that we are all human and we deserve equal respect and opportunities to lead our lives to the fullest of our potential. This thesis was written by Lisa Warden, a sociology and anthropology major, who has interviewed my mother, Marie Knockwood, on October 23rd, 1997. Walaliop. Thank you. My mother, Dr. Gwasis, Thunderchild, also known as Marie Knockwood, is a residential school survivor. And during her quest for healing, she wrote this song that I am going to sing for you today. I want my mommy and daddy. I don't want no apples or candy. Please take me back. I need the things my mommy packed. I was only 10 years old when my parents were told Catherine and Marie would be going to Shivanackety. I was just a baby yet. It was easy to forgive and forget all the pain and the fears. washed away with all my tears. Mommy, you promised I'd be all right. You didn't know what happened to me that night. When God's servant came to my bed, in their arms I'll be safe, you said. I want my mommy and daddy. I don't want no apples or candy. Please take me back. I need the things my mommy packed. A virgin smells so sweet. The blood trickled to my feet. Daddy, I called out your name. You know I'll never be the same. Dad, I seen God that night. He said I'll be all right. Let them have your body, dear. Your soul is mine, so have no fear. I want my mommy and daddy. I don't want no apples or candy. Please take me back. I need the things my mommy packed. Please take me back. I need the things my mommy packed.